CliffCentral.com.
That Life. All about lifestyle, relationships, cars, and gadgets. From Cassie to the Burb.
From Cassie to the Burb.
Yeah, that's us once more time on Easter Friday. It's a good Friday with us on Black Life. We're all in the studio, and today we have a very exciting show for all you entrepreneurs and people who want to know all about mentorship and how to get into a business and how to keep it going. How are you doing, Vilmarie? Happy Easter.
I'm good, thank you. And you?
Oh, I'm very good.
Are you on a diet?
What het gebeur met jou lippe?
You actually went there.
I had to go there because you asked me about silly things like diets and all those sort of things.
It's called tattoo, and I almost regretted.
Really?
Yeah. Why? It's very painful.
It seems like it's quite painful. Yeah. Like your lips are all dried out.
Thank
like
you. We're not taking a photo.
You know? It's okay. Yeah.
Stop staring at it.
I'm not sharing a mic with you.
Share with
you. She's dying. Vilmarie's dying.
No, seriously, I can't even laugh properly. Okay, it's painful. I went and did it on Monday. It's still not healed properly. I don't know when it's going to be.
Scotty, man.
Yeah. Yar. But I put Tomisha on there.
So what's tattooing?
What do you mean, what's tattooing?
How do you tattoo it?
Color. You, like makeup. It's called permanent makeup. Oh. It won't show on your skin.
You can always tattoo them.
Woo! Vilmarie's in town today.
Vilmarie ain't playing around today. But anyway, we've got some incredible guests with us today. And we hope that you're certainly having a fantastic Easter Friday. It is Good Friday. It's a wonderful day. I see you brought some Easter eggs.
Yeah, there's plenty, yeah.
What does Easter eggs have to do with Easter, actually?
Nothing.
Ah, okay. So why do we always do these Easter egg hunts and all sorts of madness like that if it's got nothing to do with Easter?
It's just a typical, I think, money-making thing.
Okay.
Christmas.
I've always wondered.
Good marketing.
It is good marketing.
How you doing, money? Dave?
I'm good.
we got our studio guest. Dave is in the house. Introduce our studio guest there, Vilmarie.
We've got Dave Estman and Naomi Estman, and we've got Hema. So Dave and Naomi have their thing together, which is actually a great thing. I want to ask them about it. How do they do
it? Their marriage or what are we talking about?
Well, in business.
Okay.
Could you work with your wife?
Yeah, I actually do a lot, but it's not always easy, you know, especially if we've had a fight about something completely unrelated and personal.
Let me guess, money.
Like stupid stuff, you know.
And
like,
then you got to work together.
And then we got to work together.
You guys must tell us what your secret is. And then we're going to speak to Hema from Passionate Professionals. And BC wants his mic on, to Michel.
Of course.
Dave, do you want to just... your company. It's called... Go for it.
It's called OVNP.
Okay,
which
what
means
is that
outdoor
stand?
Video and photographic.
Okay.
There you go.
He's
been around. Yeah.
Yeah, so tell us more about OVP.
OVNP has been around since the turn of the century.
But you're still young.
Well, when you say that, it's like not since 1901, actually since 2000, right?
Yeah,
right. Very clever, Dave. Got you there. And what do you guys do? I mean, outdoor video and photography. Do you specialize in anything that's got to do with outdoor? Or
yeah, the whole thing started years and years back. We're passionate about wildlife. We've given years of our lives to videoing and filming, and we're very involved in the rhino thing until recently. And it's sort of grown and grown and grown, and now we do a lot of commercial and corporate work on the video and photography side, which is exciting. It's quite unusual, actually. Normally, you find production houses either do video or they do photography, and we do both. So,
yeah, but
pretty cool.
But it gives the great combination. I mean, and Naomi, if I'm right, you're the one that handles stunning scripts. I mean, you're the writer.
Oh, thanks, Vilmarie. This is one little part of it. Yeah, the photography and video. Fortunately, it's something that we both do, both of. So that's given us a lot of advantage over the years.
It's writing in us, basically.
Yeah, the writing side is also something different that I do. I've written a novel, and I've done a lot of writing online, published online. But in terms of our photography and video, yes, it would be the scripts for the videos.
So tell me something. Your novel, is it like a photographic novel? Does it have like a lot of pictures? Or do you actually have to read stuff?
No, it's a novel. It's a women's book.
Really? What is it all about?
Yeah, it's not published yet. It's set in Cape Town, and it's got a conservation angle, which is African penguins.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's basically a love story.
It's a fiction.
Yeah, fiction. Yeah.
A South African rom-com around penguins. Tell us a bit about that. Actually, it's very exciting because we're getting a lot more South African writers coming out. And I'd say a couple of years ago, South African publishers, even up to 5 years ago, kept saying South Africans don't read, especially when it comes to South Africa. African novels, we end up buying more the international stuff, but I'm seeing that there's more and more South African writers that are actually getting their novels published. Tell us about yours.
Okay, so mine's not published yet.
Yes, but we can certainly punt it.
It was actually written with a view to be made into a movie, so it's nice to chat to you.
It's a good thing, you know, you've got an actor right here.
Exactly what I'm thinking. I have a part for you in the book.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be a big part, though, because, you know, I'm a leading man.
Yeah,
I can't just be like just some guy walking
in and
out.
You're leading penguin.
You know what they say about penguins? So is the movie based on the penguins? Because, you know, penguins find one mate and they're very monogamous, which is unlike most animals in the animal kingdom.
I didn't know that about penguins.
Really?
No. But no, the penguins are part of the story and also the oil spills. So it was set in 1994 in Cape Town. So obviously there was the whole transition that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also, there was a major disaster with the sinking of the Apollo Sea, which happened. And a lot of volunteers came to Cape Town to help save the penguins.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, so that is just, it's a key juncture in the book where some of the characters come together.
And then from there they fall in love and they meet
boy meets girl. Yeah, it's part of the love story.
Okay. And then carry on. And
there's a lot to do with scuba diving and sailing.
Fortunately, I scuba.
Us too. Yeah, that's a big passion for
us. He's really working his way in, yeah.
Hey, you got to work every angle, hey. I mean, as my manager, I'd expect you to be saying a little bit more there, Vilmarie. Just trying to sell me.
I did behind the scenes. Oh, okay. I met with him an hour before.
Oh, that's very good. I've so done I'm definitely in the film, eh? Okay. Well, tell us a bit more about your company, though. In terms of your photography and videography, what kind of stuff do you do? I mean, you say you do a lot of corporate work now. Which big corporates might we know that you work for?
We're very privileged. We've got a couple of really amazing accounts, one of them being Johannesburg Stock Exchange, we do a lot of work for. And then a bunch of construction companies, such as Group 5 and Barrow Construction, Capital Properties. And then we do a lot of wildlife stuff. Every year we cover the Safari Guide of the Year finals competition, which is up at Kruger National Park, which is a real, it's hard work, but it's great fun.
Okay, and with the Safari Guide, can people from overseas go on the website, or is there a website or videos that they can watch to see what is available for them in terms of holidays around safaris?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as I say, this is actually the final of the company, about 3,500 registered guides in South Africa.
So it's more for the guides.
It's actually, yeah.
It's a competition for the guides.
Yeah, I just say thank you to them for all the good work they do.
All right.
I saw a beautiful location on your website of a shoot that you did from, I think, probably one of the accommodation spots or something there. Is that right? On the site. Or I just misplaced that one.
Yeah, we have quite a few videos on our website from various different lodges that we visited. The Safari Guide of the Year takes place at Nkambeni in Kruger Park.
Dave,
wants to say something.
What's the wildest shoot you've ever done? Besides, like, taking photos of your beautiful wife naked, maybe videos.
Well, it's actually part of the same video.
kudos.
Sorry, we've been fortunate enough to go to Botswana and Kenya, and we've done it 26 times. So we've spent lots of time in the bush. And the lodge thing we consider more commercial, really.
Okay.
The real bush stuff is where we take our caravan and we disappear into the bush on our own, and we 100 kilometers from anyone or anything.
So your campers.
So the lions come.
But you know what? These guys said to me the other day that this is an Afrikaans thing. You see, it's not.
No, it is.
What? Because they're English.
Listen, we've been camping all our lives, and we're not about
to. It's a white thing, right?
It's a white thing.
Oh, it's a white thing. Sorry. Yeah, it is a white thing.
Do you camp on?
It's like if you live in a shack, why would you want to go live in a tent for a holiday?
Yes.
Like, that doesn't make any damn sense.
We do five star camps, Vilmarie.
Say again.
We do five star camping. So which means like, yeah, we camp where there's 5-star hotel accommodations right next to the campers. You know those camp yards?
Then I saw on your magazine.
I'm not trying to take caravan somewhere. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that's just not my
style. We've got up a step or two. I mean, we've been doing it for like 20 years. And a couple of years ago, we went from ground tents to roof tents on the vehicle to
luxury tents
on the trailer. And then
luxury tents, I do.
And then I bought a proper off-road caravan, and you can imagine the number of brownie points I won with this beautiful lady.
But you guys, recently your site was chosen as the 2014 SA Best Photographic Blog. What was that all about? How did that come about?
Thanks guys. It was a very special thing. We were very grateful to everybody that voted for us. Actually, I had initially entered my personal little blog about 5 years ago. It was nominated by someone in America, in fact. So that was how I found out about the blog competition, which I think, as far as I know, is pretty much the only way or the most leading way for online blogging to be recognized in South Africa. So what's really special, though, for us also is the company that we're in there, because one of the runner-ups in our category is Ranger Diaries, which is a fantastic blog, which brings together some of the top safari guides in South Africa and their lodges. And they actually won Best Photographic Blog and Best Environmental Blog for the previous 3 years. So it was really quite special. We've been following them for a long time because of our passion for wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens with the blogging competition, they've got 17 judges altogether and really some quite high-profile people, particularly in digital and traditional media. And then some personalities like Brayton Paulser, Chester Williams, and then Ryan O'Connor from KFM, Andrew Barnes, who's at ENCA. So it's quite an established contest that's been running for a couple of years, and a really nice way for people in the online space in South Africa to get some recognition, because we are really quite a bit behind, I'd say, certainly the States in terms of what we're doing online. So,
Naomi, it brings me to a question I want to ask you, because I think a lot of people, I mean, you understand the website side of it, you understand Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. Why blogging? What is social media is huge now, and in many ways, and I mean, what you guys are doing is, because we want to talk more about that on the video side, which for new businesses they should consider from a marketing point of view. But why would you say blogging is a benefit to a company?
All right, I feel it's very powerful. I think it's one of your central things in all of your marketing, because what you're doing there is you're using your blog to obviously share, you know, updates, so it's fresh content coming online, which is good for you from a Google, you know, search perspective. But much more than that, it's helping to establish you as a thought leader in your industry. And it's giving you good content. Obviously, the important thing is to have really quality content that offers value to your people who will be reading it. So you need to be thinking about what's really going to be helping them. And what we do then is we integrate the blog with, obviously, the website, but then with our email marketing. So we do like a monthly newsletter, which shares 4 blog posts a month. That's what we do. We recommend that's a nice amount. So you're getting across quite a lot of helpful and useful, valuable content for your people. And then the email side of it is really an important way to keep in touch, so that you're top of mind when someone's thinking about work where you might be involved, and then you'll be someone that they will be contacting. Yes. And we see that over and again. And the important thing is that a lot of this is really not expensive. So the blog itself, we use WordPress, which is not an expensive thing. We have a self-hosted blog, which is with Bluehost actually in the States, but they are local hosts. And then we use MailChimp for our emailing, which is also free, up to 2,000 contacts a month. So
it's great for entrepreneurs, new people want to start. But now your content, what do you base your content on? Is it all photography?
So ours is focused on photography and videography, but very specifically what we try to do is share with our audience, which ranges from corporate, commercial and entrepreneurs. We try to share with them ideas and inspiration and different examples of how to use photography and videography to best promote your company and your career. So,
well, what if you're a person? Let's use Tomisho as an example, because, I mean, I'm his agent. I'm not the agent, you know, but if we use him as an example, he's a person. What would you say is the best way for him to get his name out there, to promote himself now, and all the new social media ways that we've got?
All right, so because he's celebrity,
actor. He calls himself that. Yeah.
So
I'm not sure, Tumisho, if you have your own website with your own name. That's what I would suggest, Tumisho, on your surname.com.
At the moment, you know, I've been very bad with that sort of thing. I don't even have a website, but I'm sure I could start something like that.
That's a starting point.
DemishoMasha.com. Hopefully no one's stolen it yet.
Yeah, exactly. And go for the .com rather than the .co.za.
Why would you recommend that? Because I've heard a couple of years ago that this .co.za actually helps you in terms of searches because it opens faster for your South African audience. Not necessarily.
No. To tell you the truth, I'm not sure about that. But for me, I have an international outlook, and I believe that you do from hearing that you're doing international work. So .com is really the headline one.
Am I right in saying, because the thing that gets you on there when people Google you is search engine optimization. That's where experts in social media come in. So they use keywords and that on your website, like Tumisho Masha rules or rocks or whatever the case. All the good things about
hashtag
you.
Hashtag blah, blah, blah.
Yes, exactly.
And all the other stuff that Mona Bisi is always ranting on about on our station.
So, I mean, those are the things that will help him come up in the search in Google. But besides website, what would you recommend?
Then I would say also definitely have some really good photography. So we do a lot of profile pics. I've actually been shooting modeling portfolios for 10 years. So one of the things, if you have a look on LinkedIn, you can see that there's a huge crying need for people to have really good quality profile photos. And I mean, that can be really funky and, you know, go with your personality. It doesn't have to be a corporate look at all. And then also, you know, your little video intro would also be a really good idea, particularly because you're in media.
You know, I've always wondered, and this is probably the reason why I've kind of
Dimisha, did you notice Hem's smile when she was talking about LinkedIn profiles and she just started smiling? Did you guys notice that?
Yes, I don't understand.
Are you looking at
you guys are in studio with some very beautiful people and you miss the smiles.
Well, we're just trying to be, you know, just like get to the questions.
Where are you going?
I don't know where you're going with the smiles though.
Notice how when you speak someone's love language, they just smile from the inside out.
Oh, someone got a bit of love last night.
Okay.
Yeah,
BC must have gotten love because he's never this sweet.
Yes, no.
No, we actually, and maybe him is partly smiling because we're planning to do a profile shoot for her. And she's
quite shy. So she's also a guilty party there.
Is that on the videography side?
That's
now
on the photography.
Photography.
Yes, we work on video together too, but this is the profile pics for her.
But what I wanted to ask is, I mean, the purpose of having a whole website dedicated to your stuff, what is the purpose of that when you do have social media like Twitter, you've got Instagram, you've got LinkedIn, and now you have a whole website with mostly your pictures and a video intro? I mean, what am I selling on this website?
I think your website draws it all together. So if you want someone to be able to go to one place on the net, it's a credibility thing for a start off.
Right.
And then, you know, let's say you have a corporate who wants to hire you for a gig. Then rather than trailing through all of your social media, it just gives them one impactful spot where you would have, you know, references to whatever other media appearances you've done and, you know, your core services. I think it's really important. And also then if you set it up, for example, as a WordPress site, your blog is part of your website. So that's going to be coming up so people can see your latest things. Hem is actually very good at this on her site too. So your latest events, that type of thing.
I like where you're going with this because I think even outside of people who are celebrities, I think corporate types might actually benefit from something like this. If, for example, you're trying to get people to know what it is that you do, you almost have an online CV.
As a company and a person, hey.
Well, you have that with LinkedIn. I suppose there's some sensitivity with regard to your company because your company might not want you to be looking for other work necessarily. But there is also a place with intranet. That's something that we do, for example, with our corporate clients like the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. So if they want to share information between themselves with their staff, then that's very useful also, the photo and the video for that.
I want to ask something specific, Dave, something that I did with you guys. And one of your also big clients, I assume, is Yamaha. And I mean, the video that you did there, it was, how long was it?
30 seconds.
Okay, that was a short one. But I mean, like someone like Tumisho is a business, he's a profile, but he, you know, he's also a business. He sells a service. Would you agree that that's the kind of way to go these days is the video side of what you guys do? Do his profile.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it
really puts a face and a voice to the personality.
And tells a story.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, we don't, you say 30 seconds is a fairly long TV ad actually, but in terms of profiles, and documentaries and training videos and that sort of thing. We try and keep them as short as possible.
Yes.
Because people's attention span is very limited. And 2-3 minutes, 7 minutes outside, unless we're doing a documentary like Safari Guide of the Year, where there's so much interesting stuff, and it really holds the audience's attention.
Because I saw on average, I went and did a bit of research on the kind of what makes a good YouTube video or profile, or, you know, in lengthwise, anything between 2 and 4 minutes is quite a good. Anything longer than that starts, you know, getting tricky.
Correct.
But I mean, these days on, I mean, you guys enable people like Tommy Shaw and people with companies like HIMA, like Passionate Professionals, to put their profile together by using decent photography. This is how I understand it. And then, and also putting a video together and showing it to the world. So, I mean, no one's got time these days anymore to just read or take a phone call, you know. So when you see a video, for me, I'm a picture person, so I love seeing a video. I can watch it, then I know exactly what HIMA's doing. For example, or to Michel, the services that they offer. Mm. For me, that's a much bigger... Yeah. Well, isn't that the way to go these days?
Yeah, I think it's a very big part of the mix. And the other thing that's really powerful is to use video for events, which is what we've been doing recently with HIMA, because she's done some fantastic events on a global level. That's a really nice way to pay it forward for everybody who's involved, whether it's you, your partners, your sponsors, and all of the people that you can reach and actually get your message out to and help in that way.
Yeah, I mean, HIMA, what are some of the things that you've done with or that you guys are doing now?
Hello, HIMA.
Hello, HIMA.
Hi.
I think we should introduce our guest, HIMA.
I think so, yes. Wilmarie, yes. On bus coffee, eh?
I've already done the warm welcome. Yeah,
your tattoos,
they feel
yeah.
welcome.
Lipper, you had a tattoo up your lipper.
Yeah. HIMA, please go.
Okay, so where to start? Should I do a quick introduction?
Yeah,
yes.
Please.
Yes, that would be a good start, huh?
Yeah, so obviously my name is HIMA, and, you know, I call myself a multi-passionate millennial, because that's just it. You know, I'm passionate about so many things, and it's a central theme that comes up in my life. So my latest venture is the company I've just started called The Passionate Professional, and it's just about that. It's around leadership development, but specifically incubating leaders through mentorship. Mm-hmm. And we do that through various different channels, through events, through training, through consulting, and through building communities. And in getting my company started, that's just it. That's where I get to meet amazing people. Wilmarie, that's where we met you.
Yes.
At one of my events. That's where I got introduced to Naomi and Dave. So it's really been a fantastic journey over the last few months, coming up to a year soon. But a little bit over and above that, I guess I'm an engineer by profession, so a bit of a...
What?
This is the interesting bit.
What?
Good girl.
See, she's not wearing a top... What's that hat? The perception.
The hard hat.
The hard hat.
Well,
the hard hat and safety boots.
That's just...
That's
it.
A bit sexy, though.
You know, it's all about how you look at it, right?
Wait. Can we do like a fashion shoot with like... Dave, can you guys do a fashion shoot with him? Like live in the studio, so that we can like show everybody that she does not look like an engineer.
It's all about breaking misperceptions.
That really wouldn't be difficult.
But this is what I found absolutely amazing. One of the things that you do, HIMA, is, am I right in saying you are mentoring or helping other women engineers who, I mean, there's a perception that it's not the way to go for a woman. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually am around a non-profit organization called, it used to be called South African Women in Engineering, but now we've actually gone global last year. So we've sort of dropped the South Africa, and now it's just Women in Engineering. And that's actually where my passion for mentorship was born, because, you know, I always say I'm a self-acclaimed product of mentorship. You're right. You know, it's a no-brainer that engineering is very much a male-dominated field. And for 6 years I worked in industry. I've done the grease monkey. I've done the hard hat and overall. I've done the night shifts. I've done all of that.
Okay.
And a large part of me progressing in that was because of the mentors I had. And in doing so, in running the nonprofit organization, it's about giving back, paying it forward.
Yes.
You know, that can fundamentally change someone's journey, especially like you said, when all these misperceptions exist.
But I mean, you guys offer amazing things through this. Am I right? In terms of, is it... Just tell us more about that part of what you do.
Sure. So, I mean, Women's was started 9 years ago when we were studying at UCT. A couple of friends, there were two really amazing girls, Nadia and Mabu, who, you know, they initially started the organization and then I joined very early on. And it was a group of us that just really built this concept. So we run programs now across the pipeline. So at Garland, just at high school level, it's about, you know, exactly what we're talking about, creating awareness, information, breaking those misconceptions and just letting them, how many high school girls do you know are putting their hand up and like, yeah, I want to be an engineer.
But this is the thing, we were talking about this earlier, is that, I mean, grade 11 and 12, they hardly even know which way they want to go. And, you know, if it's not being motivated or for them to find out or understand that that's their strengths, or it's known as a male-dominated world, that's not the way they're going to go. So how do you source them and how do you help them develop further?
So the pipeline starts with Garland, which is an open program. We run information sessions. We're in 8 out of the 9 provinces in South Africa this year. And, you know, come and listen to us. We have over 120 volunteers with the organization, largely engineering students who just share their journeys. We have corporate sponsors, Unilever, Dinal Dynamics and the like, who then come, you know, the day in the life of a real live engineer. And that's always amazing. And then when they get into university, we run our annual fellowship program where we get in the top 60 female engineering students from around the country and we host them for a week, both with a Technovation Challenge, but also with a business upskilling program. And then at industry level, it's about thought leadership. You know, it's about getting engineers to do what they're notoriously bad at. It's like you said, there's misperceptions. If engineers are these gray box characters, they don't talk about the amazing things that they're doing. And we're really clear that men need to be part of this conversation as well. And that's something I believe in everything, not just the engineering conversation, but the whole everything. Yeah. Exactly. And like I said, it's all about these misperceptions. Misperceptions come from engineering used to be about things, right? The Industrial Revolution, very masculine, very brute. But I did a TED Talk about 2 years ago, and it was about, think about where engineering is going. When you put yourself in the news, you hear about climate change, population growth, conservation. Mm. These are about people. So engineering moving from things to people.
Yes.
And who's better equipped for that than women? And it's not about a boardroom full of women either. It's a nice balance for them. Together, to all be happy.
This woman thing. Guys, aren't we pushing too much? By the way, what did you think of that Cecil John Rhodes statue at UCT whilst you were studying there? I mean, did he offend you by any chance?
So I must say, while I was there, it wasn't obviously a hot topic at that time. And I always say it's about being empathic, right? So everybody has a different view on things, and we have to respect that. Different things mean different things to different people. How you go about airing your viewpoint, that's something that I do have an opinion about. Okay. Around when you start misbehaving and that, it may not be the most conducive behavior.
Like always, there's always something to say, but it's how we say it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, no doubt, some people are like, oh, you're making a big thing out of nothing. But for other people, it is a hurtful part of the history. And I mean, we can't just sweep that aside. I mean, that aside at UCT, I mean, always had a great experience then. It is a very dynamic campus. So where people are, you know, given the platform to have free speech. So if we're going to promote that, then let people have free speech. But again, without misbehaving.
but Hema, you mentioned something interesting the other day. I just want to ask about that, or I don't know if I'm jumping the gun, but one of these days you can offer, is it a qualification for engineering women? What is that?
No, so that's completely separate from the engineering. This is around, because the passionate professional, like I said, it's about incubating leaders through mentorship. And, you know, if we start talking more about the mentorship thing, it's a very sexy word right now. Everybody who's anybody and their dog are doing mentorship.
Yeah, they're talking about being mentored, or
being a mentor.
And sometimes I don't understand what is mentorship? What does it actually mean?
You need to mentor another actor.
So quite simply,
so I just hang out with somebody.
Well, teach them.
Quite simply, it's just about leading from experience, right? So you've walked a certain path. If that can help somebody else who's walking a similar path, if they can learn lessons from that, then that, in a nutshell, is mentorship. Having said that, and that's a very personal side of it, you know, in life, the personal mentorship should and will always still go on. But the reason why I say it needs to be more formally defined and practiced
exactly
is because nowadays what's happening, companies, these corporates, what they're doing, they're like, oh, we're building a mentorship program. And they put some top CEO together with a graduate and they're like, okay, you guys go chat. And there we go. We have a mentoring program.
Exactly. And then, I mean, it doesn't really go anywhere if, you know, you send the CEO an email to ask him something personal or something that you need help with and the person is too busy anyway to reply. Or it becomes a bit too informal.
Exactly. And it's also like, I mean, look at the people in this room. We are, and outside the room, but we are, so we're dynamic people. We're all so different, right? So what goes to say that you and I will click?
Yeah.
If you and a mentorship's also a
very
personal thing, you know? So it's the type of thing with, that there's a deeper part of how it works. It's around how do you pair a mentor and a mentee? Mm. How do you go about facilitating the relationship? Mm. How do you set proper KPIs and monitoring and evaluation to make it sustainable? And then talking about the qualification, because, you know, I spent, before I founded the Passion Professional, I left my corporate job with Sasol end of 2013, and I spent a year just sort of scoping and thinking around what is it that I want to do, and then I started the Passion Professional. And the reason why I wanted to hone in on this mentorship thing was because I wanted people to understand it. I wanted it to be practiced effectively because, like I said, I am a product of mentorship and I know when done right, it can be a leadership development tool.
Can you give us an example of how your mentorship journey went about? Who was your mentor? What were some of the key, I'd say, activities that you guys did that made it worthwhile as a mentorship relationship?
So first of all, I don't believe in having a mentor. I believe that
there's
different people.
Can she get a round of applause?
have a group of people.
And that is it. So like now, later in my life, I call them my mini board, you know. Mm-hmm. Companies have boards of directors and boards of advisors. So why shouldn't we as individuals? So I have five people on my mini board right now. But in my younger days, then it wasn't, I mean, I didn't realize it was mentorship always. Sometimes it's purposefully, sometimes it's inadvertently. I mean, sometimes, well, I often say my mother's my first and my greatest mentor because someone who I emulated many things that I do. When I
And I think that's the right way to do it. It's got to start with the parents stepping in first, right?
Yeah.
And then from there, it grows.
Absolutely. And then, of course, like, you know, just in my life, even at varsity, the people, the friends you interact with, depending on what you're learning from them, they expose you to different sets. And they, again, it's guiding along a different path. When I entered the corporate world, I had quite a senior, and it was a male mentor in the engineering space, but he was pivotal in terms of creating opportunities for me as a graduate, letting me know what's out there. I spent 2 years in Germany working as an engineer, and even you go into a new country, you don't know anybody, you don't know the language, you're working in a completely different technical field. This is where mentors become really key because that guidance has changed it for me. Mm. And then now in starting my company as a young entrepreneur, so I always say I'm your complete non-MBA entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing just wrong with something that. Burning
it's
from the core
passion.
Of my being.
Yeah.
But it's about speaking to other entrepreneurs, people who have, and I love people who have failed. You learn the most from people who have failed.
Mm-hmm.
Someone has only been successful. Yeah, it's great, right? But I think it also opens up a whole different world to you. And then going on now, like I said, now where I am, because I'm more in the education space, and I'll talk more about the qualification now, and the type of people in the entrepreneurial space, my personal mentor, and just someone who's, you know, that's my mini board, the five people who, connectors, people who are, Naomi and I think we like a 6-degree network. So I knew someone who knew someone who knew someone, and now 6 degrees later, we're sitting here talking to you together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of mentorship. It's part of the networking that they the networks that they open up to you. And then in 2013, I was selected for the Fortune 500 Global Mentorship Exchange Program. Mm. And that was the game changer for me because they chose, in my year, there were 27 women from around the world, emerging leaders in their own fields, age group like about 25 to 45. And they partnered them with a senior female executive from a Fortune 500 company for a month long of mentorship. We're in New York.
If a month intense mentoring that you do with a CEO, you can't even put a value to that.
But you know, the amazing thing about it was my biggest few learnings, but these are normal people.
Mm.
Yes, they're a CEO of a Fortune 500
that
company.
Have made mistakes.
They're making ridiculous amounts of money. They're so successful, but all of them, common themes. One, they're normal people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most of them took a leap of faith. Mm-hmm. You know, there's risk, no risk, no reward. And something that's very special to me because I'm very pro paying it forward And one of the biggest takeaways was, you know, there's no shame in making money from doing good. Because the more money you make, the more good you can do.
Absolutely.
And 2 years later, I live that every single day of my life. And that's where the passionate professional came from. That's why we do the work we do with Women's and all the work I do personally.
Speaking of the passionate professional and that sort of thing, any plans to go digital? Have you got an app coming up? I mean, there's a couple of apps out there like Mara Mentor, which is a global one. But I think there's still a lot of space for South African focus that is global with a global outlook.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was just smiling as you asked this because so many things you mentioned. So I'm very passionate about African solutions. We shouldn't always be looking to the West. And in the digital space, you know, especially in the interaction with Naomi and Dave, some phenomenal things opening my eyes to the power of video and photography. I'm also working with a network who's started the first African Resource Media Center right here in South Africa. That's with Africans for Africa. And hopefully, sneak peek, probably doing an online TV channel sometime soon.
That'll be fantastic.
It's through the training from leadership development, from that side of it. So Mentorship Musings, which is one of my chapters. You know, for me, musing speaks to inspired conversation. So through digital, I certainly think it's the way forward because it's just a very simple and effective way to touch the lives of many. Also, on a different way, we're building a mentorship hub, which should be going live by July. And so similar to Mara Mentor, but more not open to the public just yet. It's more an internal platform for mentees, mentors to connect. All the resources are available to their mentoring tools. And, you know, it goes back to where we started. How can you get mentorship done right? So through the right tools, the right facilities, the right platforms. That can, I really believe it's going to be a paradigm shift in the way mentorship is approached.
Him? How old are you, if I may ask?
I was going to ask if you're married.
That was my next question.
I'm 31.
You're 31?
Yeah.
And very busy. Okay,
and are you married?
Yes.
You are? Have you got any kids?
No.
Okay, so.
My companies are my babies.
Yeah, but it keeps you busy.
Where are we going with these questions, by the way?
Why you gotta go there?
I'm just curious because like we're trying to keep it professional.
No, because like I'm trying to find out like how she'd fit in marriage, kids.
No, so
with all. I mean, it sounds like she doesn't even have a minute to breathe.
That's what you guys say, and then you burn the.
Nonsense.
But I often get asked about work-life balance, and it's about work-life choices, right? So work-life balance doesn't exist. It's about the choices you make and having the right type of support systems, people who really believe in what you do. And because I love what I do and I see the impact I'm having, you know, I think it was a must. Richard Branson has said, if you love what you do, then you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah, I mean, it energizes you. It doesn't take from you if you enjoy it.
And having said that, you know, so at this time, because I'm building a company, that is the primary focus. Everything else has sort of taken a back seat. But there'll be different times in my life where different things will take priority. And I think I've also always been very transparent about who I am, what I'm passionate about. And again, I have amazing parents, amazing support system, amazing.
Well, isn't that actually what is so central about even the passionate professionals, that people will have, especially women, access to mentors that have walked that road. Women with husbands and kids and families who have succeeded in business, even with family.
And you know, it's that, you know, I always say in order to teach, you need to understand. In order to often understand, you need to experience. So I've also dealt, and you know, you go through adversity. I've had various adversities that I have to deal with in my life, even currently, where sometimes you have to just put the difficult times behind. When do you put up the brave face? When do you crash and burn? And whatever it is, but it's all that experience. And that's why I say I'm the non-MBA entrepreneur, but everything for me, even in the training, and that's why I don't like the word training, but the mentorship practitioner course that we've now developed, which is, it's brand new in the world. And with that, it's because of the experience. And, you know, people are like, experience and age are not directly proportional.
Is that the one that you guys are going to offer soon?
That's right. So we've just, you know, all the time I spend thinking, you know, where we started, the reason often why mentorship is not done properly is because who's building these programs? Who's doing the training? Your poor HR practitioner in, you know, corporate X is told, go build a mentoring program. So in thinking about this, I brought in a group of facilitators, and together we've developed a 9-month curricula to formally qualify what I call mentorship practitioners.
Okay.
So it's creating a whole sub-industry in the leadership space.
Having said that, I mean, you're creating, say, employment, other businesses as well. Now, how can someone become a professional mentor? Do you get paid to do that as a mentor then?
So this is even beyond a professional mentor. As a mentorship practitioner, it's in a nutshell, if anybody understands the coaching space, it's doing for mentorship what somebody did for coaching 30 years ago. So quick answers. Yes, it is in some way about monetizing mentorship, because human nature, and you know, the research shows when we spend money, we take things more seriously.
Of course.
Personal mentorship should and will still go on, but as a qualification, and we've partnered with the IDM business school, so it will actually be a business school qualification, and it's global, but for me, the passion is on the continent. This is going to be an African solution. It's where the future of leadership is. So coaching and mentorship, very different, but very complementary.
But this is the kind of thing, am I right in saying that corporates need?
Absolutely. Everybody.
Well,
everybody. Yes,
but especially,
very,
I mean,
much so.
Because
that's the starting point.
The bigger your staffing becomes, the harder it becomes to, you know, to keep an eye on everyone, to help everyone grow, to be the best what they can be in their jobs.
Managers usually
take
that role on, of mentors as well as coaches and managers.
Well, I'm sorry. I disagree.
Yeah, but you would.
If you're coaching and mentoring your staff, will that not want them to leave and start their own things? I mean, this is a selfish perspective.
Just a little. BC.
So there's a few points.
We're supposed to uplift people.
No, I like what he's asking. I mean, there's a lot of people who have
uplift.
That.
No, great. Amandla, you know, we vote for that. But
let's be honest.
Let's ask the hard questions.
The millennial today is different to, like, so you know, my dad's generation, they started in a job and they retired in that job. First of all, the millennial today is changing jobs every 3 to 5 years, if not sooner. Secondly, the millennials don't just want a boss. You're right. They want a mentoring manager. They want a manager who will manage them technically and from the mentorship side, but managers aren't equipped to do so. The third part is, it's not just, so don't think about by promoting entrepreneurship, let's not forget the concept of the intrapreneur. That's about how do you be an entrepreneur within your company.
Yeah.
And if you're a manager, if you're HR practitioners, if you're talent managers, are then equipped properly with understanding what mentorship is, it changes, it can, you know, on a micro level, it changes the individual. On a macro level, it changes
the company.
But on a mega level, it can change the whole GDP of a country in terms of how people are contributing to the economy.
I mean, I think that's the way most corporates are going to have to go, where everyone within the corporate is almost like a mini business, if you will, their personal business. People shouldn't look at jobs as, I'm just going to be an employee and collect a paycheck. But the things that I do are a business that adds to the bigger business, which is the corporate.
Absolutely. And you know, that's the whole thing. Again, with millennials, with the new generation, and men and women alike, but certainly more with women, they want jobs with purpose. If you're just going in there, pencil pushing, and then leaving at 5 o'clock, that's why you get frustrated. That's why you wake up and leave.
People don't leave the job. They leave their manager.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's very
true. You see,
true.
But that's why, I mean, on BC's question, Tomisha, I mean, you said it perfectly now. For me, you're never going to stop that person who is going to, he or she's going to start their own business. You know?
No, but they can't do it on our ground.
Of course they can. I've done it with others. When I've left, I'm still, after 10 years, still working with those people who were supportive and who were mentoring, probably more value
by having your own business as opposed to just being an employee.
And five years later, they're different.
Hey,
Ma, would you agree? 5 years later, I was going through a rough time with my business and I picked up the phone and phoned that mentor and said, can I come sit with you? I sat with him and he helped me after 5 years and we're still friends. So for me, it's about how you can contribute to each other and if I'm understanding, that's what you guys do. And then how you leave at the end of the day. Because when I left the job, I did it in discussion with him saying, this is the risk I want to take. What do you suggest?
But not everyone does that.
It wasn't behind. Yeah, but
that's
going to
happen. That's going to happen.
Not everyone.
I'm saying
these millennials,
but that's going to happen.
You can't stop.
Correct me if I'm wrong. These millennials don't think like that. They don't think like Ville-Marie.
You want to just keep them under your thumb.
Yeah, they must stay under my feet.
What a narrow way of thinking.
Stay under my feet.
I always say in life, you should never work on either extreme. So no, you're not going to get everybody to stay. But in the same breath, no, everybody's not going to leave and start their own thing either. Not everybody wants to be an
entrepreneur.
Exactly. And on that level, it's not even just about when it's staff time. I think in general, you know, we should start being more empathic and don't burn bridges. You know, people who go and they're like going to give me the resignation letter and then they laugh at everything off and they swear their boss and leave. That's not a smart thing to do in any way.
But the other thing is, when people leave your company, they might be opening a space for someone who's actually better to come in that you wouldn't have been able to hire anyway.
But only if you can bring it out in them, BC.
But not if you leave the company.
Let's ask Dave, Naomi, how do you guys deal with it? So when you guys disagree about something at the office, for example, like a difficult client, like for example, Kruger, they want it done this way, you're saying this way, and there's disagreements as to how you guys handle it. I mean, those are the real life situations. Yeah. For me, what I despise is that we come on to shows and we like paint this beautiful picture of how entrepreneurship or business is. Meanwhile, it's shit tough. Excuse my French. You know?
Yeah, but I think the point that Hema makes is very, very powerful in that you need to step back, take a breath, and talk about it as adults as opposed to immature people just throwing their toys out of the cot.
Right.
If that's the situation, if that happens, no one wins.
Okay, but how do you guys disagree and agree, and you still have to go home and have sex?
He's asking.
I'm the boss in my house, and I've got my wife's permission to say so.
Yeah. Okay.
You see, that's how you make a marriage work, ladies, young ladies out there. That's how you make it work.
And Naomi, how do you deal with it when he's saying no about something, and you honestly want to do it?
She's a mature woman.
Ah, Wilmarie, wacht, je is niet getrouwd, Nina.
I don't have to be married to be mature.
No.
But I'd love to hear. I think it will help our listeners to know to hear this. I mean, how does that work? That dynamic,
because that can get in the way. He's looking for marriage advice here.
Okay, so
he works with his wife as well, by the way.
She's
the boss at home and at the office.
Yes.
Okay, so I think that men and women can make fantastic business partners because we are extremely different. We have a very different outlook on things. But we're really fortunate. Dave's extremely masculine in his approach. He's really good with in the corporate kind of space, where for me it's a very natural fit to be with, you know, women, heart-centered entrepreneurs like Hema. But the thing is to respect each other and to respect your point of view. Hema also made a good point earlier about, you know, the empathy. Different things mean different things to different people. Mm. So if we can each be able to share our point of view, but understand that someone else might have a slightly different point of view, and very often complementary. For us, it's a key strength in our business that we are different and we approach things in a different way. It's even a key strength in our photography and our videography, because we don't even shoot things in the same way. Mm-hmm. We have a different perspective, and it really adds to the whole. It's like the mastermind concept. Yeah. And the more sort of different points of view you can have coming together with understanding, I think the more powerful your outcome at the end of the day.
So I think what BC is asking is, so what if you don't agree on something?
Thank you, Wilmarie. Hey, we agree on something for once.
Dave, how would you handle it?
As I said earlier, you know what I've learned, I'm not 25 anymore.
No, really?
I regret that sometimes.
You're 24. No,
I'm still in denial. I'm in denial.
He still rides a bike like a 25-year-old.
Thanks, Billy. I think the older you get, the better you get at learning to take a step back. I know when I was 25, you know, I was probably, not probably, I was very volatile and very impetuous. But I think with age that certainly has matured us. But Gnomes and I have been together for 22 years, I think. And you just learn to –
You've learned a way of working together in the office, I suppose, a way of communicating, and a way of disagreeing that doesn't – which happens in any business with anybody. But I guess that's something that you have to learn as people who are married, to kind of – take that out of the picture, because sometimes we get too familiar, I suppose, with each other. That, but you're my wife. Why are you disagreeing with this? You're against me. Whereas if it was another colleague, you just assume that they just have a different point of view. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think what we've learned is to recognize our strengths and our weaknesses. Mm. And you know, when Gnome says something that I respect her view for, I generally step back and think, hang on a secchi, maybe she's right. And generally she is. Mm. And also, I'd like to think that happens the other way around.
Well, yeah. I personally saw two things with you guys in the bit of time that I've seen you work. And one of the things is I haven't seen one of you make a decision on your own. You run it past the other one first, and which is great.
That's where I fail. We're working in my one.
Yeah, that's why Tanisha gets kicked out of his house every second week.
Well, that's
only
the first
once
thing.
A year, BC. It hasn't happened yet.
No, that's the newspaper one. So he gets kicked out on average once a month. So the newspaper catches the once
I get
a year
out of the
because
bedroom
she
once
phones
a month,
them
out of the house
them.
Once a year.
Okay, but here's the key tool now. Okay, so run it past each other. That's the one thing I picked up with you guys. And the other thing I saw, I think you'll always have a fiery one, which is Dave. And Gnomes is the more calm one. And I've seen Dave become quite fiery, especially in the one video, which would be me, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So you need that calming effect with you. Yeah. So, and Gnomes, that seems to be you. Am I right? That calms
yeah, I think
things
we do
down.
Balance each
yeah.
other in that
And
way.
That's the strengths and the weaknesses.
Hmm. I think it's just the facade. She's actually as hard as nails.
Well, she doesn't show it then.
The sweet ones usually are, aren't they? Well, we're going to go. It's time for us to get out of here. But before we do, I just wanted to ask Amy one last question. What is the difference between mentoring and coaching?
Okay.
Can I also ask her like a last question before she answers?
I'll give a very quick answer then. Hmm. So, you know, in a nutshell, coaching is a short-term task and performance-based engagement. You know, it's quick, it's about a performance, and the coach asks you questions so that you come to a solution. Mentoring is usually a longer-term relationship-based engagement where someone is guiding you from their experience. So someone who's walked that path, and I don't attach that to age. So someone younger can mentor someone older if they have more experience. Technology is a great example. And also reverse mentorship, peer mentorship is really fundamental to success as well. They're complementary, but different.
All right. Thank you very much. Mona BC.
Yeah, I wanted to. So what does your husband do quickly, and how does... I'm going to assume something here and correct me if I'm wrong.
Go for it.
But you're quite a dominant force. And
oh,
how
he's much more hard-headed than I am. Don't
really?
Worry.
He's really sweet.
He's also an entrepreneur.
I don't think she kicked me out the house.
Well, Hema, where can people find you? I mean, ladies who want to become engineers or mentoring or any of that.
Any of it. So I am at www.thepassionateprofessional.org. And all the details are on there. We're also on Facebook. We're on Twitter. On Twitter, I'm at Hems Vallab. So I'm
Hems with a Z.
Hems with an S. HEMSVALLABH.
All right. For more of that information, especially how to hit her up on Twitter, just go to any one of our Twitter handles. That's at
SA Speed Queen,
myself at Timisha Masha, and of course at Mono BC and Black Mag at Black Magazine. We got to get out of here. For you guys at OVNP Photography, where can we find you guys?
Okay, our website is www.ovpimaging.com. We're also on Facebook. You can also sign up near the bottom of the page on the website, any page, to register to receive our content. So you'll see how we work our blogging and our email marketing through that.
All OVP stands fantastic. For Outdoor Video
and photographic.
Well, that's us for this week. We're out of here. Have a happy Easter holiday. Drive safe on those roads. They can be hectic. We love you. It's Black Life. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Ciao. CliffCentral.com.